How did you write this movie? How did this idea come into your head?
Well, a friend of mine wanted to make the film because we'd made a film together years ago that didn't work out so well. And for years, my friend who produced this wanted to do something different. So when he said, look, I've got some money, let's make the film, I just didn't have a lot of time to put it together. So I write from a place that's inside of me. I write very quickly, and I write what's currently in my life. And I said, we're going to make a horror film, obviously, because we want to increase our chances to make some money. We want to make something that's somewhat viable. And an independent film making horror films, there's a good market for that. If you can make something that has decent quality and good acting and, again, a good story, there is still a market for horror films. But so I was writing it based on the thing that scares me the most. And right now at my age, and, you know, it's always been scary for me, is the idea of committing to, you know, to a relationship and getting married. You know what I mean? These are big, huge fears that I have. So I thought, how can I make a film that in my mind at least is somewhat original based on what's currently inside my head? What are my neuroses? What are my fears? And it's like, okay, this is easy. I was right about my fear of commitment. And so it all comes into the metaphor of a vampire film, the vampire being an ultimate kind of symbol or metaphor for selfishness and living a self-absorbed life, you know, and this idea, this realization that at some point you do have to commit to something other than yourself. So
why do you think you're so scared of commitment? What do you think it is?
You know, obligation, it sucks, man. Like, obligation comes, you know, working a 9-to-5 job. It's like having to do this. You've been trying to escape obligation since you were born. And when you're 18, you know, you're free of your parents, you know, the constricting kind of the relationship that you have with your parents. School, you don't have to be in school anymore. So your whole life up until you're 18 is you had to do this, you had to do this. And when you're in a relationship, it's more of the same. You have to provide for, you know, you have to be responsible. You have to think about someone else. And, you know, ultimately it comes down to money. I am not motivated by money. And I am a 42-year-old bohemian who I've got a job. I pay my bills. I'm responsible. But I don't have to work that hard to sustain a very, very simplistic lifestyle. I have my apartment. I can pay for my apartment. I do have a house in North Carolina that's very cheap that I rent to friends, but it's like I just have that in order to be to have somewhere for my money to go. But like it's very little for me to have to maintain a lifestyle. If I were to have a family and kids, I would definitely have to maybe up my game and maybe make more money. I'm sure my wife would make money too. I'm not saying I have to be the only breadwinner, but I would have to be responsible. I would have to make more money, and that doesn't. And I've never really made money off film or art, so I would probably have to work a job or at least start a business or something that I probably don't 100% love, and that means, you know, that's obligation. And the idea of just making money, I think, is what's terrifying. I mean, I know plenty of people, actually, who don't have a lot of money, who have kids, and that's all well and fine. I don't know. I just don't want to get stressed. That such a stresses me out thinking about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's a pressure. You get it from everywhere, this idea, this cultural pressure to say, look, you're supposed to do this, have a family, have a kids at a certain age, and be responsible. But I'm fighting against it. But I'm lucky. I have a girlfriend right now who we've been together 2 years, and she doesn't like the idea of marriage. She's not interested in the idea of kids, so it's very good right now. It's not a lot of pressure in it. It feels very, very nice. It feels very good, you know. So,
was it always your intention to be in this film?
Yeah, I've always planned on writing this role for myself, just because it's based on my own kind of, you know, the things about my personality that I don't like. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like that I do have a selfishness. I'm trying to be more giving and open and more generous to my girlfriend, to my friends, trying to think about them more than myself. But it's about things I don't like about myself. There are a lot of complaints about the character not being likable, but I think being selfish is not it is an unseemly trait, and it's the kind of things I'm trying to address. I'm trying to make better myself, you know. So I was always going to play this role. I felt like, okay, if I can play any role, it's this character. When you write the dialogue too. And I've been in a couple of films before, so it's like I do enjoy being in front of the camera, and I enjoy it, and I feel very comfortable being in front of the camera. So I always knew it was going to be for me, yeah. And I enjoy it. It's fun. But, you know, also, there's a very small crew of people, and, you know, I was directing the film, but I also allowed and wanted direction from everybody on the crew, from the actors to the DPs, the producers. Everybody was giving feedback, and everybody was being part of the collective experience, offering suggestions on how to make the scenes better. So it was very, very collaborative, and I felt really good about that. So I got a lot of help from the crew and the producers in terms of just directing the overall scenes. Because I'd often be in a scene, and I wasn't aware of everything that was going on. Normally, I wouldn't be aware if my energy level was dropping. So producers would help me get my energy level back up if I was starting to fade or get tired. So,
what was the relationship like amongst the cast? How did you guys, how was the film casted, and then what was the relationship like on set?
We didn't really have any auditions. We basically, being in New York for 4 years, you get to know a lot of actors, and you see a lot of independent films that not a lot of people see, but, you know, the independent film community sees. So we cast based on actors that we knew, actors I wanted to work with, other filmmakers' suggestions based on who knew who. Melody Sisk, she plays the redheaded actress in the movie. She's also a producer on the film. She got Fred Vogel, the special effects guy. She got Anna Margaret Holloman, who played the lead female actress. I ran into Dakota Goldhoor, who plays the girl Penelope, who I'm infatuated with at work. I met her years ago, and I ran into her at a coffee shop as we were shooting, and the actress that was supposed to play her role dropped out. So just by serendipity, I ran into Dakota. I knew how great she was, and I knew that she'd be good for the part. So we just cast based on people that we knew, and the relationship was good. I mean, like, everybody, you know, I don't want to work with anyone who doesn't want to be on set. No one got everyone's going to get paid now, but no one got paid at the time. So we only wanted to cast people who, first of all, were really passionate about acting and would give us their time. And, you know, also we're shooting very quickly in order to – because if people aren't getting paid, they can't spend that much time on a movie they're not getting paid on. So that was one of the reasons we shot with two cameras, and we shot very quickly. But we shot very quickly. I mean, the relationship was good. It was all business. I mean, we had a lot of fun, obviously, because we wanted to get that energy on the screen. But, you know, we're only shooting 10 days. There's not a lot of time for goofing around. We were – focused and like, how are we going to make this? How are we going to make it as good as possible? And how can we be lost in the moment? We'll forget that the cameras are on and just be completely present and spontaneous and surprise ourselves with what happens in the scene. So it was great. Like, you can't make a film with like this, I think, intimately with a small group of people and not be, you know, have a good relationship very close to the people. Also, no one minced words. We would argue, or people would say, I don't like that, or don't do this. It's not the kind of thing where, you know, you don't get resentful, and you don't get bitter, and you don't get angry or upset or hold grudges or pout. You just you roll with it, and you try to make something together. And it was a lot of fun. It was amazing. I'm very lucky.
The way the internet film community is now, if you've never heard of a film, you kind of check out a clip online. If you like that, then you go and you check out the film. If you had to pick one, like, little clip or one segment of the film that you would say, see this, and then you'll want to see this movie, which part of the film do you think you'd tell them to see?
I like the scene where I mesmerize the landlord. I think there's something really funny and ridiculous about that scene, and I've always enjoyed it. People have always talked about that scene. That's, to me, I mean, I know it's because I think Jerry Rake, who plays the landlord, he's also so good, and it's so ridiculous, and this idea of, you know, you're walking a fine line. I've lived in New York, and I've been here 4 years, and, you know, I being from the South, you don't think about Jewish people or Judaism as much in the South. So when I came to New York, New York is a Jewish town. You know what I mean? There's so many Jewish people here. They're wonderful, and I have a connection with, like, kind of the neurotic Woody Allen. I've been watching Woody Allen for years, so it's like I've always connected with him, but I never thought of him as Jewish because I don't know. In a weird way, it's just like I was watching it and not connecting with that aspect of it, because he also always kind of rejected his Jewishness in a way. You know, he was super struggling. But so that scene to me is funny because I wanted to address Judaism in a way. My own landlord, his name is Lieberman, and he's got 10 kids, and he's Hasidic, and he's very, very orthodox, he's very committed to Judaism, and it's like I wanted to play around with it without offending, obviously, and I have lots of Jewish friends. There's a producer who's Jewish on the movie, and it was like, for me, that scene's just, to me, funny, because it's very New York in a lot of ways, but with just intimate kind of conversation between two people, and it's also ridiculous, and it plays into this idea of, like, the Jewish landlord who wants his money, but at the same time, it's not offensive, it's just kind of, it's funny, it's playing on a generalized idea that might be stereotypical, but I think in a way that's playful and not hateful, you know. So
the thing that I like about the film is it has a lot of cult appeal. It's kind of a film we could watch 4 or 5 years from now, and it'll still have the same effect on us as it does now. So my question to you is, how do you want this film to ultimately be remembered, period?
How do I want it to be remembered? You know, if people watch it and they talk about it, I think it's just so hard. I'll watch a movie now and forget that I even saw it, even if I liked it. if they could just remember it to some degree, you know what I mean? If anybody's ever talking about, oh, shit, that's not, you know, ultimately I'd like it to be remembered as something like American Werewolf in London. That's like, that's your ultimate love and your hope is like, people remember this classic movie, but it can't compare to a movie like that, to American Werewolf in London. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's on the same lines as, like, the movie Hump Day or The Puffy Chair or you know, maybe the movie Habit by Larry Fessenden, which I think is amazing, and I go to it, and it influenced me. I'd like it to influence a filmmaker like the movie Habit influenced me, or the movie Vampire's Kiss influenced me, or the way Rick Alverson's The Comedy influenced me. If it can have some influence on a young filmmaker who's trying to scrap together a movie or something, if it can just influence them to try something new, or to make something about, you know, about, I don't know, for me, characters that are unsavory are interesting. I connect with them. I identify with characters that are somewhat selfish and somewhat assholish. And I guess if I make something that somebody can connect to and see a little bit of themselves in and make them want to change based on the fact that they're looking at a mirror image of themselves, that might be nice. I don't know. It's hard to say that because it's so difficult. There's so many movies that come out now, and so many of them are forgotten, and so many great movies are forgotten, that it's silly for me to even answer the question, because I love this movie, I'm a fan of this movie, I'd like people to still be watching it, and a few years from now, at least remember it, I don't know, the idea of memory in movies, and classic movies now, or movies still, you know, still being in people's minds years after they watch them, seems almost impossible to me to fathom, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Although, The Comedy, you know, I think I'll remember that movie and I'll go back to that movie after years after seeing it. Deconstructing Harry by Woody Allen. Mary Harron's American Psycho, the adaptation of the Bret Easton Ellis novel. These are movies that influenced Summer of Blood. So these movies are movies that stick with me in a classic sense. They will always be with me. But Summer of Blood, I don't see that, you know, not without being too self-deprecating, I don't see it in the same category. I just feel like those are such brilliant, wonderful movies.